The IAB presents the Simplify and Inspire podcast.
How do we make it simple?
Try to stop a lot of the buzzwords.
A chance to change the way a whole industry works.
For more information, visit iabaustralia.com.au.
Hello and welcome to the IAB Simplify and Inspire podcast. Joining me today is Kat Prestipino from Adrel. Kat, welcome. Good to have you here. We love working with Adrel. We particularly love the view from your office. It's quite magical. Let's get into the podcast, though. We always like to start with the real person. So tell us a bit about you, where you're from, your journey. What have you done between when your career started and how you got to Adrel, and what was the most exciting thing that happened to you on the way?
Sure. Thanks for having me as well, Vijay. So full disclosure, first up, I am a millennial. I'm 32 years old and I started my career. Basically, I didn't know what I wanted to do and I became an EA for somebody. While I was in that role, marketing was changing a little bit and I was the only person in the office who had coding skills. I have my own food blog and so I taught myself how to code HTML. And it was back in the days where CRM systems were very hacked together. And I also had a Facebook account, which was a new thing back then. And
what year are we talking?
We're talking 2006.
Wow.
I had a Facebook account and my MD thought that was going to be something that was going to be important to a membership organization. And so I was turned over to the marketing department, as it were, to help run their memberships because I could work the CRM system and I had a social media account.
So hang on, 2006, you're on Facebook.
Yep.
You've got a food blog.
Yep.
And you've taught yourself HTML.
Yep.
That's impressive.
I just found an interest in it. I really loved blogging. In order to set myself up doing that, I was a uni student. I couldn't afford to have somebody help me out. So I taught myself off the internet how to code.
How hard was that, learning to code?
To be fair, I took it in small baby steps at the time. It was like, okay, I want to change the color of the background now. How do I do that? And worked it out. So it was really funny. And then when it got to that stage, when I was in my first job and they were like, do you know how to do this? And I was like, oh yeah, I do know how to connect these pieces. It was then I'd realized that these actual small baby steps I'd been taking was something really valuable. So, like I said, got turned over to the marketing department and that's where my career in marketing started. And I was working in film and television for the first 4 to 5 years of my career. I was in London as well. I'd moved over there and the recession
hit. What took you there?
Just for fun.
Right.
My cousin was living over there. She was having a great time. It was back in the days where you earned so much money in London with overtime and everything that it was great coming home. And then the recession hit and everything changed. And in that, I was made redundant and I didn't really know what I wanted to do next. And a friend of mine was working in tech and said, look, there's a new startup that's just started in London and they're looking for a marketer. And I think you'd be really good because you've worked in such a variety of different places. You're used to things happening on the fly. You're used to having to really buck in because obviously being in film and television production, there's not a huge amount of money going around. So I think you'd be really great for this startup. And
what was the startup?
It was Tribal Fusion, which are now known as Exponential. So I worked for them in London for the next 3 years.
And what were you doing?
I was doing a little bit of everything. So social media, PR, communications, events, really helping them build their brand. And one of the things which I think really strikes with the IAB at the moment was trying to make ad tech really simple, because I think we do get caught up a lot as an industry in our own jargon. And what I found really useful is when you try and break that down is when you see people understand it. And it's so interesting and powerful what we do that we really need to democratize it. We really need to make it easier for people to access. We really need to help marketers understand how this can help their businesses.
Music to my ears. How have you gone about trying to do that then in your world?
So I was really attracted to Adrel as a brand when I moved there because that was the sole focus of everything. Adrel's background, they didn't build the product initially for big business. They built it for small SMBs. They built it for really small companies that, you know, would have either a founder operator or, you know, a sole marketer that just needed to get display online.
And for those that might not know, what even is Adrel?
We're a first-party data platform. So what we do is we take the information that you get about your customers from your website or your CRM system, and then we help you use that to serve ads online, both in a display environment and a social environment.
Funny, in a previous podcast, I was speaking to Scott from Seismic and we ended up spending a lot of time talking about data. To be able to do that, is there a sort of data prerequisite that you need to have as an advertiser to be able to play with AdRel?
So as a small company, you don't need to have a huge amount of data. Like it only, the amount of data that you have in terms of retargeting, which is where you advertise to people who have already been with your website, you are a little bit limited there if you've only got a small number of people coming to your website. But if you want to do something like prospecting, which is where you go out and try and find new customers, you're not limited because it's what we can learn about your customers. It might not be as targeted as what we can do with someone that has a large number of people coming to their site because we basically, our algorithm learns off the data. So the more you can tell the little robots working behind your website what is going on, the smarter they can make their decisions. So you don't lose anything by only having a small amount of data or a small number of visitors coming to your website. But if you had a larger number, we would obviously have more information to work off, more things to inform those decisions, and we can make smarter decisions.
One of the other things we've been kicking off in this podcast series is the use of metaphors. We've had film metaphors, fruit metaphors, but you've just put another image into my head, which is little robots.
That's the way I think of it. I think about our algorithm as like little robots running around behind the website because that's essentially what's happening. Like it's not some big scary machine. It's like these little robots that are taking in information about your website, your brand, your customers, people that are coming to your website who you want to make customers. And it's just making smart decisions for you without you having to do all that work. A really great stat that I bring out at dinner parties is AdRel actually crunches 4 times the amount of data than the New York Stock Exchange a day. And those are those little robots just sucking in all that information and then helping you as a marketer make smarter decisions. Because there's no way you could look at that much data and make the right decision off it.
So one of the things I love about audio is the ability to be the TV of the mind. I want us to play a bit more with these little robots. So am I imagining kind of huge armies where they're all doing the same thing? Are there different kind of regiments where you're dividing them up? Can you bring some color and some light to this army of robots?
So I see them like minions. And I imagine that there's like a set of minions.
So they're yellow.
They're yellow and blue. There's a group on the back of your website and they're kind of taking in all the information and then passing it on to another set of minions who are there sitting sort of on our technology side. Mm-hmm. And then there's another set of minions going, okay, match that ad with that user who's on that third party site. And so there's no, 3 sets of minions running that data back and forth. Does that help paint the picture a little bit better?
So you have got different sets of minions that are playing a different role. So it's a sort of production line of minions.
Yeah, it's like a production line of minions passing your information back and forth.
Right. And what type of information might they be passing?
So it's all sorts of things. It's like, you know, if you are on a retail website and you're looking at, you know, blazers, it might be running information back and forth about, you know, how many blazers did you look at? Were they men's or women's? Were they in a particular color? And it's running back and forth that sort of information so that it knows what to serve you. So if you just looked at one blazer, really basic in the women's section, it might serve you a couple of different blazer options. But if you spent 5 minutes looking at a particular white blazer in the women's section with 2 silver buttons, but you didn't buy it or you put it in your basket but you never got through to purchase, it tells that information and then the minions run that exact blazer up to you to go, hey, are you sure you didn't want to buy this?
Right.
And that's how it works.
So you've gone and done that, which is awesome, and you've then bought the blazer. But often you then get served ads after you've bought the blazer. Why is that and what can we do about that?
The main reason is because people are working with more than one provider.
Right.
And the reality is we all work off our own individual pixels, so we've all got our own individual sets of minions running back and forth.
I'm now picturing huge armies of minions. Depending on which company you're working for, you've got your own set of segmented minions.
But if you imagine those minions don't talk to each other.
Right.
So if you purchased on the site and only our minions saw it, the other minions will still think that you're interested in that blazer, and so they'll keep running back and forth. So that's the main reason why people tend to see ads after they've already purchased something, is they're working with 2 providers.
Right.
So really making
sure. So it's not a limitation of the technology.
No.
It's just our ability or sometimes inability to join the dots.
Yeah, it's also, I think, people think they need to work with more than one provider. People think a lot of the time that, you know, you can't do as well in a single system. It's too hard to see a single view of my customers. And more technology providers have been able to link that up now. So it's not a limitation of the technology. It's just how do we think about buying technology?
And back to Adrel for a second. Within the digital ecosystem or the digital value chain, who do you tend to work with? Where do you fit into that broader value chain?
We work with agencies and brands alike.
Right.
We've always been agency first. We'll work however the brand prefers us to work. So we work really closely with iProspect and a few other big players out there. But in terms of who we're buying from, we also have really strong partnerships with Google, with Facebook. We're one of the first to get access to inventory on Instagram. We're plugged into over 500 SSPs, and that's supply-side platforms, so people who congregate loads of sites together to allow for programmatic buying and selling. We plug into about 500 of those. So we are really trying to give our customers the single view of their customers. So we're trying to help stop that problem of being served an ad after you've purchased your blazer.
Right, okay. And you're one of many organisations within the IAB that aren't just housed in Australia, but you have offices around the world and I think an HQ in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a couple of questions around that, which is what are the dynamics of working in Australia with a US HQ? What do you learn from each other and what are your observations around you know, what we might do better or what they might do better and what we can learn and what we have learned from each other?
Yeah, and I suppose I kind of come at this question from two views, because not only do I sit inside an org that is global, I also sit inside a global marketing team. And my purview is also kind of influenced because I run both the APAC team and the Japan team for marketing. So I suppose as a business, we bring a lot of fun to it as the Australian office. In the way that we behave, the way that we act, the way we approach things. Our office globally is very much seen as a work hard, play hard office. So we are very high performing. We get the results, but we also have a lot of fun doing it. And that's something that I think every single MD that's come to visit us has tried to take back to their office. At the same time, I think from the US, what we learn is they do a lot of things first and they can do a lot of things at scale. So we tend to take their learnings. You know, they normally go out to customers first with the product and we watch how it works and go, okay.
So they'll take new products, for example,
yeah,
first to a customer and you'll see what happens and learn from that.
Exactly.
Can you give me an example?
So for example, Sendroll, which is our email product that we launched last year, they took that out first because they had more customers that sat in sort of the target of who we were going for. And we learned a lot from them about how the product worked, how we should talk about it in market, how do we make it simple? Because to a lot of people, I think it didn't make sense that we were launching an email product when in fact, when we started talking about it, like it's another inventory source, it's another way to get in front of your potential customers, that made a lot more sense. And so we were able to take that learning and bring it back here to Australia. By the same token, there are some products that they developed that actually work better here.
Right.
Which one of them I can't talk about at the moment, but a number of our Australian clients have been in the test for it because they are a far better fit for this product. And we're teaching the US how to talk about it.
Besides having more fun, what are we best at in Australia?
I think we're really good at being creative. One of the things we definitely see from our marketing team here is that we tend to have really creative and fun ideas. So things like, you know, if you're an Adrel customer, you got a pair of personalized budgie smugglers last year for your Christmas present.
Nice.
You know, we did a campaign in July, our Christmas in July campaign, to remind retail advertisers, Christmas is coming, talk to us now about your plans. Don't ring us in November and go, oh dear, I forgot. And we did Christmas baubles, and the messaging was it takes balls to talk about Christmas in July. And I think the US loves some of that stuff. Some of it does have to be pared back a little bit, but I think we have a lot of creativity and that does get exported.
Courageous humour. there's a big thing that's going on right now in terms of the programmatic summer. And one question I've asked everyone is, what even is programmatic?
Programmatic is the minions. That's essentially what it is. It is an automated way of buying and selling advertising so that you don't have to think about it. It does require a little bit of faith that the minions are making the right decisions for you and for your business. But it is essentially automating that process away from you. So you don't have to think about it. You don't have to call up a publisher and say, hey, I want to place 100 ads on this site at this time. The minions go, you know what? These people need to see these ads. This is the best ad for them. And it all happens behind the scenes.
And how can we feel confident that the minions aren't driving down the price or serving, you know, the wrong ads in the wrong place?
Well, there are, you know, you need to do your checks and balances on this. And there are a number of companies like Integral Ad Science who do that. And we partner with them, also making sure that whoever you're working with are members of appropriate industry bodies like the IAB, who are keeping a check on them. I would steer away from anyone who wasn't happy with you wanting to do checks and balances on them, and who wasn't a member of industry bodies that do self-regulate. Because clearly, if they don't want to be regulated, there's something going on there.
Right. Okay. So make sure they're associated with us, with the MRC, or working with an independent measurement company.
Yeah.
I'm conscious we're getting to the end of the podcast. I know you've done quite an extensive study in the area of programmatic with marketers. Are you able to share any little secrets from this study before it goes public of what you've heard and what that means?
Yeah, so we'll be presenting at the Programmatic Summit our state of performance marketing for the third year in a row. So we've done this study now 3 years talking to marketers and agencies about what they see as the big trends, what are they doing with their budgets, what are they investing in. No surprise, 25% increase from 2016-2017 in what marketers are going to invest in programmatic. They see it as a really high-performing channel, particularly when they compare it. When we compared those numbers to what the US was seeing, marketers here have a lot more confidence in programmatic. So they're putting their budgets where their hearts are and really investing in the channel. What I think this means is that we will see more inventory sources coming online. There's been a lot of talk in the last 12 months about programmatic television, how that's going to work, programmatic radio. So I think programmatic is really going to move beyond just the digital space this year, just being on desktop and mobile. And we're going to see it start to infiltrate other forms of media buying going forward.
Fantastic. Look forward to seeing more detail and understanding the implications of that study. Thank you so much for joining us. You've left me with an astounding image of minions. I'm expecting to see that in AdRail presentations from now onwards.
I don't know if we've got copyright for that.
Yeah, we'll have to find a way around that. But thank you so much for coming and for shedding a lot of light on our space and helping drive our Simplify and Inspire journey.
Thanks, BJ.
The IAB's Simplify and Inspire podcast. For more information, visit iabaustralia.com.au.